You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley, that dude.
Yes, sir.
Coming up, we'll tell you if teams should be worried about those negative reports about Kyler Murray.
And I've got another installment of the Emmy Award-winning That Dude's
Dude. Da-da-da-da.
But we start every day with a Whitlock, so hit him, big dog.
America's most popular television show is setting aside major new roles for women. No, I'm not talking about HBO's Game of Thrones. It's actually the trailblazer in placing female roles on equal footing with men. I can put together a persuasive argument that Game of Thrones heroines, Daenerys Targaryen, Cersei Lannister, Sansa Stark, Arya Stark, and Brienne of Tarth, are the reason the most popular television show on 5 different networks is desperately trying to feminize its cast. I'm talking about the NFL. It's just a TV show, no different from Game of Thrones, and the NFL wants you, yes, you, young lady, the woman smart enough and bold enough to watch this sports talk show built around discussing football. Days before the scouting combine in Indianapolis, the NFL hosted the 3rd annual Women's Careers in Football Forum. The allegedly toxically masculine league invited 42 carefully selected women to spend 2 days networking with NFL decision makers. According to the website thefootballgirl.com, Tampa Bay head coach Bruce Arians announced at the forum that he would create a full-time coaching position for women on his staff. Right now, only the San Francisco 49ers have a full-time female coach, Katie Sowers, who is in her 3rd season as an NFL assistant. Let me make this prediction. Within the next 20 years, there will be a female head coach in the National Football League. Go ahead, giggle. Call me crazy, a hot take artist. I'm gonna be right. The NFL is going to fix its CTE problem one female coach at a time. You don't see the connection between CTE and female coaches? You don't see how the concussion issue has been used to argue that moms should stop allowing their young boys to play football? You don't see how concussions and domestic violence issues have damaged football's relationship with women? Let's be honest here. No one, and I mean no one, cares about the brain health of highly compensated football players or any other professional athlete. The media hysteria and misinformation around CTE are just tools in a long war to make America's national pastime and number one pop culture influencer more diverse and inclusive. Once women, particularly white women, have prominent high-paying jobs in the NFL, the media will quit pretending that football causes more concussions than soccer. Football is king in America. It sits on the Iron Throne. Kings, queens, want to sit on that throne too. The NFL is well aware of what is driving the hypercriticism of its league. Envy, greed, lust for power. The NFL is the real-life Game of Thrones. The league realizes it has to do a better job of sharing its power. That's why it's gone along with the Tony Harris hoax, the one about the 22-year-old woman playing safety at an NAIA school. And that's why Katie Sowers may one day replace Kyle Shanahan as head coach of the San Francisco 49ers. All right, joining the desk now, a couple of former Pro Bowlers, D'Angelo Hall and DaQuell Jackson. Marcellus, I'll start with you.
Yes, sir.
Will women joining the NFL coaching ranks be good for football?
They're going to be just like the men. Some of them going to be good, some of them going to be bad. We all know, man, being in these football games that in the same game, more teams will lose that game than actually go out there and win that game. Coaches used to say that, and it took a second for it to sink in, but I started to realize, oh, you mean making mistakes, not being properly prepared, not playing situational football. It doesn't come down always to the talent. It doesn't always come down to just the measurements. It comes down to, in those critical moments, how will you respond? And I don't see any different response gender-based, based on a woman who knows the game versus a man who knows the game. I used to sit there, and this started in high school when I started to judge my coaches. And Pop Warner, I was just like, yeah, coach, whatever you want to do, 38 sweep, yep, 37 sweep, yep, that's all we ran. Then I got to high school, and I started to learn more about the game, know some of the details, and I started to judge my coaches. I used to look at these fat, old, out of shape, usually white men, I'm like, you ain't no 12th man. You telling me to do stuff you can't do, coach. And I remember sitting there just judging him until I realized, oh, he just said something I never knew. Oh, he just took me somewhere I'd never been. Then I said, you know what? I'm not judging that book by its cover anymore. Respect. And you can look at it all the way to the highest level of coaching. Bill Belichick, who I respect tremendously, we all do as a coach. He was a center at Wesleyan. Trust me. Come up to me talking about you was a center at Wesleyan. I ain't giving you no respect. You better earn it. So if I'm not going to judge a Bill Belichick on down based on perception and looks and gender, why would I do that to a woman? All they need is the opportunity.
I mean, I think women coaching in the National Football League, you know, I think it can work. I think it is a positive thing. Like you just talked about, Whit, you're absolutely right. If you're trying to get the conversation away from CTE and domestic violence and some of these other issues that's perplexing the NFL, get women into the game. Let them have a stake into it. Because right now, all you see are men. All you see are white men, black men, guys with big beards, you know, scary-looking guys. Right. You know, you get a nice-looking woman, you know, right up there as the face of your organization that knows what she's talking about. Like, I don't have a problem if that woman's qualified. She'll garner the respect that, in that locker room. I remember Condoleezza Rice came and spoke to the Redskins one day.
Okay.
And we all were just kind of mesmerized because she had that kind of, you know, just that influence that guys were just hanging on every word that she said. And it was around the time that her name was kind of being floated around as commissioner. Mm. And so we jumped into a whole lot of questions, and she told us about kind of her upbringing and how she was always around football and how her dad kind of wanted, you know, a son. And so for us, we were kind of mesmerized. And I think at that particular moment, I was kind of like, man, she could actually be the commissioner of the National Football League, and guys would respect who she is and what she's done.
Just for clarity, it doesn't have to be a nice-looking woman. I mean, you said that. I mean, because it's some ugly coaches. You didn't mean it that way, right?
I'm just saying. Softer than myself. Yeah. Standing in front of them with a scowl on my face.
Right.
Okay.
I just think from an imagery standpoint, the NFL, that's one thing they're going to go to bat for. And like you hit on with CTE and the domestic violence issues, I think we need to see more women in these positions. Like you alluded to, D-Hall, if I have a mother that is on the fence about having their child play football, this brutal, violent sport, you know what? I want to hear from other mothers. I want to hear from other mothers that work for this organization to say, you know what? This can work. It's not as violent. It's not as brutal. But on the flip side of this, we got to understand a lot of these women are raised these, you know, from single family households, have raised these kids, you know, that'll go on to be the Julio Jones of the world are, you know, coached by all these men. But in my, you know, with my day in Cleveland, with 8 years in Cleveland, I had a ton of head coaches, right? And I would do exactly what you did. I would judge every coach.
Hell yeah.
Well, are you a leader? Are you a motivator? Can you motivate me? I think women, women can motivate. So I think it's not far-fetched to think they can be head coaches.
Let me say this, too, and this will sound somewhat sexist. I'm going to apologize up front. But I can remember, coaches started hiring, like I remember when Dick Vermeil had a Mike White as basically his assistant head coach. He was in charge of game day, time management. I think replay was involved at that time. He helped Dick Vermeil coach the team from the press box as a head coach. And so I think it would be tough for a woman to go in and coach the offensive line. I really do. I'm just sorry. And I think that would be a tough heel. But there are some roles on coaching staffs where I think they could have instant impact without having to have the ultimate expertise on X's and O's. And particularly when we're talking about, because again, if you go back to the essence of football at its foundation, it's really about mentoring men. Mm-hmm. And to put some women in roles where they can help mentor these men, particularly the ones that are struggling off the field and in their personal life, but also what DeQuell is talking about. When you got a lot of guys coming from single-parent homes and they're used to hearing a woman's voice, mm-hmm. it can be an advantage.
Well, let me say this, a couple things. One, if you really think it through, a woman in a position of being a coach is not going to defuse CTE conversations. It's not. You know why? Because you're going to put that woman in a position to lie just like all the male coaches are. Look, if you play a violent game, I don't care how much padding you put on this car, it's still going to hurt when we
it's
get into
this
collision.
Well, you don't know my about it.
Okay, yeah. so even position, the imagery, the optics, I don't think that really diffuses it because I'm from a two-parent home, and right. I'm a father who has a young son who is saying as a father, before his mother even started the conversation, I said, my son's not playing football. I know the rigors of the game. Right. I don't want my son bleeding in the ninth grade. I want my son concussed in the 12th grade. Right. I don't want his fingers looking like this for the rest of his life. For what? I went through those situations and adversity for him to benefit. That said, y'all ain't met my mama before. Y'all ain't met my sister. You said certain positions you think a woman can walk into it and it's going to be less it's barriers of entry and more impact. I disagree, man. I played for Bill Parcells. I played for Marty Schottenheimer, who resumes spoke for themselves. And then even in that, I still had to judge the person. And I remember just looking at him like, where's the athlete in that? Where's the football player in that? But he's a male, so I'm just supposed to sit there and say, oh, you good? I could see a woman easily going to the offensive lineman if she gives them a scheme, if she gives them a philosophy, and those guys saying, I judged you wrong, but now I'm about to go get this, because she doesn't need to get in the trenches with them to make that something that you can do.
I think more so what we're saying is so many jobs
on a staff,
mm-hmm. yes, in support roles that don't necessarily require this female coach to actually be on the field. Because at the end of the day, you can say you judge a book by its cover, but how much knowledge do you have having not been able to coach along the ranks? A lot of these coaches in the National Football League, they don't just wake up one morning, want to coach, have, you know, because they've read some books and, you know, haven't been in those firefights. A lot of those guys have played at some level. And so for some of these women, they won't have had that experience. And so for them to come into a different type of role where they aren't just thrown immediately onto the football field trying to ask the coach a position, I definitely see that working immediately. And I think it is a couple organizations that has some of these women in development. What is it
called? Well, the 49ers have a full-time
woman. They got a good development minority development program that they've been participating in. Listen, again, because we're trying to, they're having these meetings trying to fast track some women NFL. Mm-hmm. And again, most coaches start out in college and put the years in there and blah, blah, blah. They play the position, then they're coaching and blah, blah, blah. And so I think if you're trying to fast track it, there are some positions on staffs where you can't, and it makes sense and the impact will be immediately felt and authentic and real. I think there's some areas where the NFL is struggling, where having those women on the staff will help immediately. Do we think a woman could be successful as an NFL head coach?
Absolutely.
I think so.
Absolutely.
I mean, you look at what the head coach's role is for a football team. What does he have to do? One, he has to motivate. Two, he has to inspire men. We've already hit on that for a second. And why not hire people that actually can do their job? The offensive coordinator, your job is to worry about the offense, defensive coordinator and so forth and special teams. Your job as a head coach, if you have qualified guys in those positions, a woman can motivate. We talked about the single family mother raising these kids to go play football and so
but
forth.
But see, DeQuell, it's the process. It's the process. How do you get to that final point?
We're going
to
judge regardless.
And you haven't got...
Exactly. Like, we're going to judge whoever's
Sean
talking.
Sean McVay to Bill Belichick in the Super Bowl.
Right.
How did Sean McVay get there?
Right. Until you prove to me
Sean
you
McVay
can win.
Became a position coach. Or Sean McVay got in.
But you know how he got there? You know how he jumped that line?
Because he knew somebody.
Yeah, nepotism.
But I'm just saying. Yeah,
nepotism.
I'm just saying, along the way, at some point, you have to hold a position coach job. At some point,
no, you don't. I don't think so.
You don't have to hold a position coach job.
No, I disagree with that.
So these billion-dollar owners just all of a sudden are going to entrust their franchise to someone who's never done it.
Okay, I'm listening.
Let's keep it real, because we've all been around football coaches, college, pro level.
And most of them suck.
Right, but not just that. But what type of people are they? This is not These aren't sophisticated intellectual college professors. These are stereotypical men, if mm-hmm. you were to generalize.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
so there is some sexism.
Oh, yeah.
And so when you start talking about what a head coach really does, he coaches the other coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, again, where I do think it will be a challenge to find, you have to coach those in the NFL, 15, 16 other coaches. That's your job. And that group of men that's not Barack Obama.
We got to pick a lane. One, we say that all Bill Belichick needs to do is find his deputy sheriff to enforce his culture in Tom Brady. And once you get Tom Brady on board, you got the team, right? That's how it works. The best coaches, Popovich. Coach that can get his best player on board, that best player will now all of a sudden enforce that culture. You're trying to tell me now a woman cannot be in that position? She ain't got to coach the bottom of the barrel. She got to coach the good ones, too.
No one said
that. Oh, she has to coach your coaches too.
But she's got to coach. That's what Bill Belichick does most of the time, is coach the other coaches. And we can't just say, it ain't just about relationships with the players. It's about, look, when Marty Schottenheimer showed up in the defensive room, Gunther Cunningham, whoever their defensive coordinator was, he was there to elevate Gunther Cunningham's thinking about the defensive game plan.
Yeah.
That's the head coach's job.
Yeah. And a woman is limited in that scope by what criteria, what qualifications, like the barriers of entry, we understand there's sexism, there's ignorance, but if we're saying they can't leap over that because
of
what?
They can.
Women are natural nurturers. And you say they have to delegate the other position coaches? Absolutely. Have to coach the other coaches. Yeah. Well, what does coaches actually have to do other than, because you have a paperwork of exactly what you're teaching, but then also you have to delegate the relationships within that room. And I think from a position of power, if a woman is controlling that narrative,
sexist as these coaches may be, half of them are in marriages, half of them in relationships. Like, they already work in a dynamic where they respect that.
But their wife isn't there trying to elevate their X's and O's. And that's, the head coach does that. There will have to be head coach, there is a level of X and O's that you have to be.
That you have to know. And that's why I'm saying, you're saying fast track somebody. You have to go through the process.
Right.
The process. And in going through the process, the other coaches on your staff respect you for going through the process. And they know, hey, he knows or she knows what they're talking about because they've been through the process. They've been where I am right now. You have to delegate those roles as the head coach. And what Whit's saying is, will she ultimately garner the respect of the people behind her if they've given her the job?
You know what? That's something we're going to judge regardless.
Well, how many bad coaches are there?
It's not a necessity anymore.
How many bad coaches in the National Football League because they have buddies or guys they trust as position coaches and guys that won't necessarily fight back as a bad coach because they don't want a good coach in there that's always got their eye on I want your job. How many bad coaches have you seen on staffs because they're friends or because of the nepotism aspect of it?
Oh, yeah.
Instead of, hey, man, I wish we'd have kept so-and-so who was on
that.
The last regime.
We know that, but
he's a great coach.
But we understand. Also, look, it's been on the field. It's on the sidelines. It's all the time. Antonio Gates was undrafted to my team when I was a Charger. And they looked him up and down and said, dude, you didn't even play college football. Bum, bum, bum. And then he went out there and gave him work. And then all of a sudden, you know what? It's going to be the same thing with a coach. How'd you get here? What's wrong with you? How'd you skip the line? And then you're going to sit here or here. And then all of a sudden, you got to either fall in line because they commanded that respect, or you're going to get out of line because they didn't. But that's not gender-based because there's too many coaches that made me roll my eyes because I'm looking at this man, and I'm like, what is he doing?
I'm just saying, unless from ownership standpoint that they're behind the move to do this, ultimately pick a head coach who's never coached before. Because like I said, I mean, it's a process, and we're saying 20 years. So 20 years, the process maybe would have worked its way, you know, worked itself out by that time. But
do you respect a woman from the professional league? There is women's professional leagues. If a woman from a professional league came, is that proper criteria?
Women's professional football he's talking about.
Yeah, women's professional football.
Yeah.
Does that count?
I mean, it doesn't bother me one way or the other.
Okay.
I would like for the person who's coaching my unit, if I was an owner, coaching my team, to have somewhat of a understanding of what's going on.
Mm. All right, we gotta go. We've chopped that up pretty good.
Mm. Well, you did great for it.
Guys are terrible at taking care of their health. Whether it's a knee injury, bad back, or something worse, we're usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. I'm guilty of it myself. particularly when I was younger and playing football. I can remember hurting my shoulder and never telling the trainers. That turned into a real problem. The same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to get checked out by a doctor and get treated for ED online. Roman is a one-stop shop where licensed U.S. physicians can diagnose ED and ship medication right to your door. With Roman, there are no waiting rooms, awkward face-to-face conversations, or uncomfortable trips to the pharmacy. You can handle everything discreetly online. All you have to do is visit GetRoman.com/speak, fill out a brief medical onboarding, chat with the doctor, and get FDA-approved ED meds delivered to your door in discreet, unmarked packaging. That's GetRoman.com/speak. Guys, go online and get checked by the doctor. Erectile dysfunction is a problem that guys don't tackle, but with Roman, it's really easy, so take care of it. For a free online visit, go to GetRoman.com/speak. That's GetRoman.com/speak for a free online visit. GetRoman.com/speak.
All right, welcome back. We're Lock and Wiley. D'Angelo Hall and DaQuell Jackson are back. Time for a big story sponsored by Papa John's. Two medium, one topping pizzas, just $6 each. All right, let's move to the NFL Combine, where all eyes have been on Kyler Murray, and not everyone is liking what they see. According to the NFL Network's Charlie Casserly, Murray had the most negative feedback he's ever heard for a top-rated quarterback, including that his leadership, study habits, and board work were all, quote, not good. Not surprisingly, Casserly's report has sparked a backlash from some people online. Listen, man, to me, this is what goes with being the number one pick in the NFL draft. Mm. There's going to be noise and there's going to be criticism. I've said it for 25 years now, maybe longer than that. 1990, my boy Jeff George, I grew up with, played, he was the number one pick in the draft, and they shredded his personality. Mm. And this is what goes on. Josh Rosen, just he wasn't even the number one pick. They shredded his personality before the draft.
Right. Yeah.
Par for the course.
It really is. It seems like it could connect to maybe some deeper issues, but let's stay on the surface at first. And I think Charlie, whoever gave him this information, just got caught up in the wash, which is this time of year where everyone is doing gamesmanship to basically devalue whoever they want. And it's funny that this report kind of lacks perspective in terms of his accomplishments on the field, and you want to wash all that away for just a 20-minute interview, and we've all been through those interviews at the Combine. It's amazing that it didn't balance that out with the equation of his success and his objective qualities. I remember getting drafted by a team called the Buffalo Bills. Not one interview, not they didn't show up to my pro day, not one call, request, anything. Because they wanted the guy in question, myself, who went to an Ivy League school, who they could say, oh, man, I don't know if he can make it at the pros. He looks big, fast, strong, but he can't make it. They didn't want my value to increase, so they just stayed away. And it's funny, it works on the flip side as well. If you are the number one potential overall pick, they'll talk to you, and they'll be like, man, that dude's a mess. And you just got to make sure you do measured reporting in these moments. And I don't know if Charlie's comments come off as measured.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about gamesmanship. I don't think this is gamesmanship in this particular instance. You know, I said earlier that Charlie Casserly is well-respected. I necessarily don't really agree with some of the things Charlie Casserly says or his viewpoint on things. I think he's a old-school GM who tries to act a little new age as far as the kind of players they are now in today's NFL and just the game. Mm. I think the game's changed a lot from when he was running the team to what it is now. With that being said, unless he can tell me exactly what team said what, I can't take Charlie's word for it, you know, because I've seen this kid play football, and I've seen guys around him that know him better than Charlie and better than some of those teams. And I've seen players who were considered top draft picks, top one or two, three in that particular order, go into an interview and turn it off because you're picking 25. So I don't really want to be here. I'm here because they say I have to be here, but, you know, I can turn it off and on. I mean, we've seen Kyler Murray do interviews where he's closed-lipped, where he is barely talking or he doesn't want to. And then I've seen him do interviews where he lights up the room. Right. And so for me, I think this is more so just Kyler Murray not really wanting to be in those interview rooms because he knows in the back of his head, I'm sorry, I almost said Lincoln Riley, but he knows Cliff Kingsbury is going to take him one anyway.
Yeah, I think it's just it's fishing season. It's fishing season right now. And all you guys hit on it. There's so much going on right now. We all know, the guys who've been to the combine, when you get to the combine, teams already know. You're there to basically reconfirm what they already know about you. And is this some mystery report that 32 teams didn't know about? I don't think so. I just think it's far-fetched. I think it's just a story that that can catch some bait. And I don't think, for what we've seen on film of what this kid can do inside of the pocket, outside of the pocket, he just seems like a guy that exudes leadership and playmaking ability.
I'm going to play the other side a little bit here in terms of, look, I don't think Charlie Cashley has any agenda other than repeating what he heard. Somebody got into the interview room, didn't like Kyler Murray and the way he responded, told Charlie Cashley. He repeated. That is news this time of year. And you can take it for what it's worth. Mm-hmm. And the other layer I would add to this is, and I don't want to go too far away, but I just got to keep it real. Apples don't fall far from trees. And so Kyler Murray's dad, Kevin Murray, flamed out for a reason. He was a bit of these things that they're saying about his son were said about him. This dude was a two-time All-American at Texas A&M that flamed out, should have had a pro career, but had some personality quirks. And I say apples don't fall from the tree because I'm a lot like my dad, man. And I don't like very many people. I don't like to be around very many people. And I got a low tolerance for dumb stuff, just like my father.
Suffer no fool.
it's apples don't fall from, and I think that's what they're saying here subtly through Charlie Cashley.
You know what's funny? Lonzo certainly fell far from LeVar. I mean, he ain't the same.
I rap album.
I'm not like my daddy. And if you meet my daddy, that tall scarecrow man was quiet. But you know what? It's crazy. You only repeat what you hear if you don't know any better. And that's where I thought the expertise of Charlie would kick in. And some people are taking shots at Charlie. Look, Charlie may be looking at it through the lens of, I think this quarterback is great. Remember he took David Carr? Okay, so if you're looking at it through the lens that he doesn't measure up in the room to a David Carr, maybe that's a positive. Who knows? But I'm not going to take all those shots, but I'm going to look at this film, and he's in the same place.
Individual criticism, though, that he repeated that what? He didn't do well at the board, drawing a play.
Yeah, right.
And I'm going to tell you why that rings true to me. What? He only started for 1 year. He started, again, and there's a blueprint for successful NFL quarterbacks. The more games you start in the NFL, four years, the more likely you are to be successful in the NFL. And so, college, the more games you start in college. And so, Kyler Murray started for 1 year. That's a little bit of a red flag.
Leadership,
but,
though?
But wait, what I would say to that is, man, if this kid played 1 year and he was able to do the things and he doesn't know much, man, when I coach him up, he's going to be amazing.
Say it.
I wouldn't take that as, oh, man, he dumb. He ain't going to be able to do nothing. I would take that more so, man, he is so raw. Wait till I get my hands on him as a coach to mold him into what I think he can be.
Measured.
Now, again, when you've got a Heisman Trophy and a father who's going to be right there with you, who's an expert on quarterbacks, too, when you start talking about molding somebody, they got to be willing to be molded. And that's, I think, what they're raising questions about. All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley, joined now by Fox NBA analyst Iceberg Jim Jackson and NBA champion Action Steven Jackson. All right, let's move to the NBA, where the Lakers host the Nuggets tonight, with LeBron needing just 13 points to pass Michael Jordan for fourth on the all-time scoring list. That may be the only bright spot for the Lakers, who have lost 13 of 18 and dropped to 5.5 games out of the eighth seed. But even LeBron's latest milestone could boomerang on him, because the guy sitting in third place on the scoring list just happens to be Kobe Bryant, which leads us to this conversation. Has the disaster this season moved LeBron out of the Jordan conversation and into a debate about whether or not he's better than Kobe? And I've been a long time LeBron is better than Kobe guy. I'm now flipping. Kobe, the competitive nature of Kobe, the Mamba mentality that's being talked about and talked about and talked about,
I'm jumping ship to Kobe.
You said that with a straight face. You straight up with it. So you just burned 16 years of tape just because you saw somebody give a little more effort at the end of the day.
It's the third time.
Okay, you know what?
Third time I seen him not be compete.
It's amazing in your glory years, which is supposed to be the gravy years, that we now going to judge you on the meat and potatoes, which is the film that said that LeBron is definitively better than Kobe Bryant. He passed Kobe Bryant. You can't go backwards. This is supposed to help you, not hurt you, these years of LeBron's career. It's insane for anybody to look at effort, which obviously translates to fans.
Competition, Marcel.
Oh, it is competition, but it's also achievement. It's also achievement. He's jogging to a 27-9-8. Kobe wasn't doing that in year 16, and Kobe was giving full effort. I'll leave you with this. For example, my coach used to always say in training camp, fans would go crazy like you when somebody would run a 9 route and dive for it. Oh, the fans like, oh, man, he's going to be nice this year. Watch that dude. Watch for him. And coach would say, yeah, if he was a little faster, he wouldn't have to dive for it. Think about that. LeBron may be looking like he's jogging. You may be misinterpreting all of LeBron's effort as, oh, it's just too casual. But in reality, he's still putting up achieving
numbers. Oh,
they're
shoving him to guard people, but go ahead.
One play, bro. One Cuzzo. Play, bro.
I mean, at this point, he wasn't past Kobe to me just because of that reason.
Like, competitor.
Yes, if he had the Mamba mentality, he would be the best ever. Close to, I got Kareem at the top to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, he would be in that conversation even more, but not being a competitor, not having that Mamba mentality, not dominating when you know you can, playing to the level of your competition, he shouldn't be doing that.
He wasn't better than Kobe before he came to L.A.?
But like this, they're both great in their own right. Kobe is a better competitor. He's a better scorer. LeBron is a better all-around player. At the end of the day, he hasn't passed Kobe in points yet.
That's coming.
Championship.
He hasn't passed him in championships.
No.
So what I'm saying, they're both great.
That's not coming.
They're both great in their own right. But me personally, I have to go with Kobe because that's the type of guy I want on my team. He plays harder and he's great.
I think it's more so on the L.A. level, too, though, because now it's being accentuated here at L.A. because of what Kobe accomplished. I don't think nationally, I don't think that conversation is as relevant as it is here in L.A. because now they're going back to, well, Kobe would have done this. Kobe would have, he never would have done this.
Right.
And some of the things that Kobe didn't do right, like the game we had in Phoenix, we're in game 7 where he didn't shoot in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. People forget about that.
Right.
Okay, because right. He was trying to send a message.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this accentuates everything that Kobe did right because of what's happening with LeBron. And let's keep in mind, I said this before. Overall, LeBron is a better player. But I would rather guard LeBron than Michael or Kobe.
Any day.
Because with those two, if they're not hitting a jump shot, they go to mid-post, they go down to the post.
Yeah.
And when they get to the free throw line, they're going to make you pay. With LeBron, is some things that I think I can take away. And he'll kind of phase out a little bit. Those two, they continue to come at you no matter what.
So, but then they're comparing, the fans are comparing 20 years here in L.A. and 5 championships to 1 year.
You can't do that.
It's not a fair comparison. And you look at the team he's playing with. It's not a fair comparison. But that's the fans that, what have you done for me lately, fans? They want you to
win. But that's why I push back at Whitlock.
It's a problem.
I push back at a fan that flips. I don't push back at somebody say he was never better than Kobe for me. I respect that, but how does he flip based on this?
I react to new information. That is me for my entire life. And so, look, when LeBron quit in Cleveland the first time playing Boston, I'm going to give him that one. He was frustrated. When he had the Dallas series, mm-hmm. I was like, that was tough.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give him that. They went on 1-2 championships. He won one in Cleveland. 3 strikes and you're out. This is a hot mess. The dude's not playing defense. He's disengaged. He's not competing. Jim makes a great point. Kobe's went through some games where he wouldn't shoot, and that's non-competitive. That's him throwing mm-hmm. a tantrum. But I'm going to give him that. They're talking right now about a Mamba mentality. I heard Dwayne Wade reference it. I hear everybody now, Kyrie. Mamba mentality. Mamba mentality. What's the LeBron mentality?
But he's never claimed to have that.
Right.
He's there because he never. That's not part of his DNA.
Okay.
And Steve, you know that. Right. But here's the thing.
What's he leaving
if,
us with?
If he had that.
What's he leaving
us with?
What are we going to be talking about?
He transformed the game in a lot of different ways. Okay, he has transformed this game in a lot of different ways.
No question.
Okay, nobody has the power.
Crystallize it for me.
Nobody has the power that LeBron has. Okay, listen. He changed training camp. He changed the way you looked at free agency.
He changed everything.
He changed
Let me push back.
Okay, go ahead.
Let me push back. I just heard Adam Silver talk about this. And we're not old enough to remember. But Adam Silver said, hey, man, there's been this yin and yang between player and ownership throughout the history of the NBA. Wilt Chamberlain made Philadelphia fire their coach and make him the head coach, and then he bounced on him. Bill Russell made the Celtics make him the head coach. Players have been having and exercising power. The NBA pushes back and takes back control. But he's not, to us in our lifetime, he's the first to have this kind of power. But there have been others who have had that power. And so, and look, maybe that will be LeBron's legacy, the power that he accumulated. But to what good did it lead to in terms of...
What?
Let me finish. New information. Okay. We hear new information.
That power, did it contribute to his overall team accomplishments? Did it help him reach the ultimate goal the way it did? Whatever power Jordan had, it led to 6 championships. Kobe, it led to 5. Magic, it led to 5. LeBron's sitting here with 3, and damn it, that's underachievement in my opinion.
It's not underachievement because LeBron, it wasn't all about him. It was about every player in the league. He wanted everybody to benefit. That's what he changed. He changed the whole league. Now, it wasn't about him. You can see it. You can see it. Why are guys not confident enough to come out and say, I want to play with this guy? Because of LeBron. Why are guys confident enough to say, I want to work out with this guy?
You
because
know how
of LeBron. Why are guys that can't play making money? Because of LeBron.
Where's their sports agency? Why they're still active?
Let me tell you how the fans hear that. Yeah, LeBron made it normal for you to give up on competing against your peers and go team up.
That's not what he did.
But that's the signal that's been interrupted right now. Effort translates to fans. They say, we gave our hard-earned money. We don't see you giving 100%. We got a problem. But the beauty of what you're saying is you could easily be flipped. Because all LeBron needs to do is be on a winning team next year with these Lakers, get a free agent. This could flip like nothing for you. But for us who have seen enough of the body of work, it's cemented where you are pretty much. This is the gravy years. I just don't use that to subtract from your greatness.
Here's the thing. I'm going to go back to this. There's been players that got power. Wilt's deal was he had an agreement with the owner of the Warriors at the time for 20% ownership that he passed away. The other owner said no. So that's why Wilt wanted to be traded. Kareem got traded. Michael had power, but when Reinsdorf And that group said, they're done.
Yeah.
Nobody has had the influence all around on just a team and a league like LeBron, period. When you go when you go from changing back-to-back games, okay, because LeBron wants to do that, and the way training camp is, and free agency, think about this. By circumventing the salary cap and saying, okay, the max deals are you stay here. You know what they did? They said, we're going to circumvent this. We're going to do 2-year deals with a three-year deal with a 2-year out. That's how we're going to get around the max deal and get our money. That was him.
Yeah.
So power-wise, guys had influence. That's one thing. Power, nobody had it like this.
And then, like Mike, I said again, they had Mike power. Did. But
no, he didn't.
He thought about everybody.
Mike didn't have
Mike
did
it for everybody. Mike still selling more shoes than everybody.
But that's a whole – that ain't – that is power. And listen, if he had so much power, why that Bulls team didn't come back for another year?
Because they told him no, they was.
they told him.
Time to get antisocial. Wiley, Jim Jackson, the Jackson brothers.
Jackson brothers.
Got that right there.
My favorite. My man Darnell.
Big old drip.
Boy.
Came through dripping.
They're paying your boy now. You know what I mean? Got new merch.
Too fresh to be stale. They're paying you in t-shirts. You taking it.
I like that. You see the logo?
I like the logo. Drip merch.
$25.99.
Why you always got to put the 99 on the end?
You know what I mean? It adds up. Right.
What's popping in Twitter, man?
Yes, sir. We're going to start with the Lakers, whose playoff hopes are looking nearly impossible at this point. They're 3-7 in their last 10 games, and both Magic and LeBron have been getting the bulk of the blame. Someone even went as far as painting a picture of them sitting in the car mimicking this famous photo of Tupac and Suge Knight sitting in Las Vegas. Does Laker Nation deserve to be this?
I can't, man.
hit him up.
Agitated. Right? Wait. Well,
he's a thick around the neck.
Hey, Connie. But I like your explanation earlier. They're like, this does make sense. Magic got him out here in these LA. Yeah. Magic got to ride through the streets, messing around, and going to get in trouble in LA. You got to protect your boy. Got him in some stuff he ain't ready for.
You see, kind of Magic got on red and did that like a little blue right there on LeBron? You see what I'm saying? Got him in the wrong neighborhood. That's the wrong neighborhood. With the blue on.
Oh, we good. We got a pass. We got a pass.
Dropped him off and pulled off. Oh,
and LeBron, look at them deer heads.
Yeah, like, man, I thought we was cool over here.
All right. They got neighborhoods like this in Cleveland.
Yeah, no.
You got to get up out of here, dog.
Let him know your dress code.
Get up out of there, bro. Yeah, go back, Bron.
Whoever did this, this is nice. I saw
that. Let's go. Let's go.
I give it to him.
Get him out of here. Go back.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, man, so Antonio Brown, he's been in the headlines for a lot of reasons lately, but this one might top the list. Take a listen.
Happy 38th birthday. And I hear this your second anniversary wedding. I hear you've been working really hard as a defense attorney, and your birthday is here. Happy birthday. We celebrate you today. Hope your birthday is booming.
Would you ever give a paid message like AB?
Yeah.
Well, one.
I've done it. I work for that same company. I've done it before. It's easy money. Like, for a minute. All right, here you go.
You wouldn't do it like that, though.
I wouldn't have pace.
And it wouldn't be
eloquent.
It wouldn't be AB. It'd be Rihanna or Tracy Ellis Ross or somebody. It wouldn't be no guy. No.
But I've done it. I've worked with them before. I've done that.
What did you do? How much you charge?
I only did like two of them. Then I was like, you know what? It ain't adding up like a. You think
it sounded good at the beginning?
$500 for a minute?
I got it. You start adding up how many minutes you can do it. I can be good on that. Know.
You got to read through the transcript.
You know what? At the beginning, I'll do it.
Yeah, stop. It's easy money.
I'll try to see how I can monetize it. But then after a while, like you say,
Yeah, it ain't worth it. All money ain't good.
You can do it anywhere. Why wouldn't you do it?
Yeah,
it's free money.
As soon as you walk out the back, happy birthday, bro.
You would do it.
You wouldn't do it?
I've done something different. This when I was in Kansas City, I had people that would pay money for me to come and be like at their husband's 40th birthday party or 50th birthday party. Mm-hmm. I had a family, it was their dad's, I think, 60th birthday party, flew me out to Las Vegas, put me up in a hotel, and all I had to do was go to dinner with them that night as they celebrated the 60th.
You did that for free.
Hold on, I thought he was going to say he jumped out the cake.
I went to the radio with him at Caesar's Palace, I think.
How much you get paid? Let me hear.
$5,000.
Oh, okay. Buried the headline.
Where we going?
How old is he now? Is he 80?
Lost it all in the dice.
That's all right. It was found money. It was found money.
If he's still alive, we need to hit him up.
That Mastro is money. Let him go back.
I like that.
All right, it's time for Darnell's question of the day. Darnell, take it away.
It's Darnell. That's
my guy. My guy.
My question of the day. My question of the day.
285 pounds. All right, guys. So last week, Bleacher Report posted a video of a couple of basketball players talking about their first time being called the N-word. Mm-hmm. Now, we've all, you know, heard the word plenty of times within sports, especially in the locker room. So, you know, I wanted to ask you guys, what are your philosophy on the use of the N-word?
Let me start, because I watched the Bleacher Report thing, and I want to interject this the first. I didn't like the Bleacher Report thing and the whole going, let me go ask you for your memory of being called the N-word by a white person, as if this is some historic moment in their life. And it's just not.
Yeah.
For me personally, if someone had asked me to talk, well, you remember the first, I was like, hell no. And, you know, I really don't want to, it's just not a white person calling me some ignorant name is not some monumental moment in my life that I'll never forget. So I didn't like the framing of their question, but anyway.
It never happened to me overtly. I've never been called the N-word by anybody negative tone. Never in my life. I'm just blessed, I guess. Mm-hmm. Lucky. I don't know.
You used to make fights then.
No, I ain't no fighter. I'll beat you with these words, and I'm out. And I'm fast. I can run. I used to use it profusely until my mid-30s. My wife, who's black from Canada, came down, was like,
y'all tripping with the use of the N-word. And I was like, really? Put it on my radar. I still was using it, clowning her. And then finally, got to a place where I was at a Jay-Z concert. Tom Ford came on. This is about 6 years, wherever that song came out. And I, this little white dude wanted to take a picture of me. I was like, all right, we between songs. Taking the picture, the beat dropped. Boom, boom, boom. Clap for what? Guess what he said? With 80 other thousand people, most of them right. white. Right. And I said, you know what? Never again coming out of my mouth. I ain't trying to flip that negative to a positive.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I look at it kind of the same way, but I've never dealt with it, but I've heard it at games, especially when the brawl. I heard it a lot that day. I've never had somebody come to my face and say, you are one. I've never dealt with it like
really?
That. Really? Oh, yeah, I heard it in Utah a couple times, too.
But just as a kid, you never got in a fight with a white dude where he called you the N-word?
I've never gotten in a fight with a white person in my life. Mm. In my life. Never have.
They knew better, huh?
I mean, they knew better. I didn't put myself in that situation.
Right,
you know what I'm saying? Like I said, I've perfect example, Pow Wow, the rapper, he's white. He grew up around all black people.
Paul Wall.
Okay. His whole life. Mm-hmm. He's the reason why the whole industry's wearing grills.
Yep.
Love it. He has the right to say it. He's never said it once in his life.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like people know, I have common sense to know when somebody's saying it to demean me or when somebody's saying it as a term of endearment, because that's really what it is to us. Right. We say it to each other.
To you.
To us, to the people that I hang with.
Yeah.
See, right. You know
and growing up like that, I've been in a situation from my grade school when it was predominantly all black, I got shipped to more of a white junior high school for whatever reason. And we had all kind of issues with teachers, the area, the students. We got called it all the time, okay? Mm-hmm. When we went to local swimming pools sometimes in Toledo on the south side, we got called it. So I heard it a lot growing up, unfortunately. But then there was a distinction between how we used it in the neighborhood and how they used it, mm-hmm. you know? But then as I got older and I started looking at stuff, and like you said, when somebody get real comfortable singing a song about it, and you standing right there and they singing the song, and they saying it, I'm like, hold up, partner, you can't use that like that. Right. So I get how, especially an older generation than us.
I respect it.
They're like, listen, that word to us demeans so much. So I tried to get away from using that word just based on how I've grown as a person and how it made me feel when I was younger.
Obviously, I've written and talked about this for years. I don't like the use of the N-word, even amongst us.
Right.
I think that if you went anywhere in any urban city in America, where there's gun violence among our youth, a lot of times the last thing you'll hear before someone pulls that trigger is the N-word with an A on it. And so we love to say there's a difference between the A and the ER, not when they pulling that trigger. And so for us to sit here and think we've turned this word into a positive, I think it's preposterous.
Breach.
And I think that we should move away from it. And I just think it's very confusing and conflicting. You can't demand the level of respect that you're not willing to give yourself.
Say it.
Like, and I got a question to you. Yeah. Isn't it a rule in the NFL that if you say it on the field?
Yeah, it's a penalty.
Why not?
So, because everybody can't say it, one. So
what I'm saying is, so
how do I measure your endearment level?
Right, but I'm saying, so you can't say that, but right. all this other stuff is cool.
Right.
Well, yeah, I hear you there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not fool.
Like, I don't get that.
Why,
like,
why I do I, when know. I'm playing, and again, that,
if it's freedom of speech, though, right?
Huh? So, but you can call.
You
don't
know what else to say in the midst of a white, game when I'm trying to.
But can you call a white male something like a crack or something like that and get away with it?
Is that banned?
I don't know all the words.
But that's what I'm saying.
Is that banned though?
If you go do it,
I don't know.
Now you crossing that line on what's appropriate and what's not.
I don't understand why you'd have a problem with the rule. Why can't we compete with some level of respect?
Millions of words out there.
Who is trying to go sack a quarterback and thinking about not saying the N-word?
Not?
Yes.
You thinking about it?
Exhibit A. I'm thinking about the M-word.
Money.
Money.
You're right. You on the line and you in the middle of competing in the middle.
It's natural, right?
You're not thinking about not saying that word?
Yes, I am.
I don't have to think about not saying it. It's just...
I can say mother.
You can say...
Boy, I get off that line quicker if I say mother.
But you know what, though? If you're so used to using it, In regards to what we
ain't
do.
Ain't nobody that used to it.
No, please.
You get around
please.
Certain situations,
it's like,
you ain't
it's like,
when your teammates make a good
go.
It's like, hey, Ninja, get out the way.
Yep.
All right, welcome back. With Locke and Wiley, joined by Jim Jackson and Steven Jackson. It's time for Dat Dude's Dudes. Marcellus, what you got?
Putting us both on the block. Ooh, let's go, some big boys posted up, man. You know we got three plays right here. Let's start with our number three Dat Dude of the week, Justice Winslow. This is the Justice League right here. You can see the Heat beat the Hawks Monday night, 114-113. Look at Bam Adebayo right here, comes down with the rebound. See you, nice little play right here, averaging over 6.5. And he gets the ball out of Josh Richardson. Uh-oh, pushes his head to Justice Winslow. Look at him, jogging. Keeps progressing up the court. As you get onto the ball, to the big man. Oh, we're going to time to come in. Oh,
finding.
Nice play right there. But let's see how this play really went down and the breakdown of it. First thing you can see is when we're watching the Heat here. Oh, a little magic in the air. I know we're watching the Heat, but this is a magical play right over Trae Young's eyes.
Little guy.
Little man. Get your game up. Get your height up. Disappearing act now. Ooh, what kind of play was that?
Swaggy beat.
Swaggy comes out. I didn't see that coming. Oh, hit him with the play. But watch this. Watch the eye contact right here. Little blind flow. Ooh. Oh,
and one.
See, oh, Miyagi, I have learned.
Bird box layup.
Hit him in with the layup. Hey, you need to do this.
That was a good one.
That was a great one. Hey, Justice Winslow, you that dude. That number dude. Three of the week. Now let's go to our number two of the week. Suns forward Mikal Bridges, Phoenix Rising. All right, Talking Stick Resort Arena in Phoenix. Oh, my God, Bridges brings it up. Big effort, sprinting after the turnover. 60 feet to make the steal. Bridges is fast, but you also know that the ball moves faster than man. So watch this. Oh, get that ball up the court. Ooh, all that in 3.1 seconds.
That extra
Rashawn
effort.
Rashawn Holmes powers home the nice windmill jam. Now, the bench gang is loving it. Oh, and I meant gang. You see them fingers? Okay. You can steal the broadcast. Bridges, 19 straight games with a steal, longest active streak in the NBA, gets the ball up court. Let's see the hustle play from Bridges first, yeah. And then we can see the powerful jam.
Can't teach you.
Holmes, after the sweet dime from Clipper great Jamal Crawford in the building.
Gotta get a Clipper. Gotta get a Clipper.
Suns still have the second worst record in the league, but they did beat the Lakers, so they gotta be proud about that. But still, number one, the Nets shooting guard Joe Harris, training day right here. Beat the Mavs on Monday night. Let's wild out in Brooklyn Zoo. Shout out to ODB, rest in peace. As you can see, four men in the paint. What y'all doing? One of them dudes is 40 years old. What the hell? Stuck in the paint right there. You can see Jared Allen. Kicks the ball out to Joe Harris on the wing. You got to close out on him, huh, Luka? Watch yourself. Got a little issue. Some people say you break your ankle. Sometimes you just roll your ankle.
They didn't teach him right. He's closing out with the wrong foot.
Play right there. Well, I got a balloon for him. Get well soon, big dog. Because you know what? You went out there and got stutter-stepped right there.
They don't teach.
Tweaked it. Hey, Joe Harris, you know who you are. Not only three-point champ, number one, that dude of the week.
That
he
dude.
Nice. He nice.
Yeah, he nice.
All right, thank you, Marcellus. That was awesome. Let's move to a big NBA matchup from last night where the Celtics snapped out of their funk, blowing out the Warriors at Golden State. Gordon Hayward had one of his best games of the year, scoring 30. And after the game, Kyrie Irving said the long plane ride helped the team sort some of their issues out. Meanwhile, the Warriors came out flat, which has been a problem of late, and the 33-point home loss was the worst of the Steve Kerr era. Question here is, who's to say more about the Celtics or the Warriors? I'm going to lean the Celtics. They're showing a signs of life.
Yeah, man, you get tired of fighting the world and then fighting yourselves and finally just fight together and play the game. And it looks like a team that even Kevin Durant went out there and said, they're going to be fine in the playoffs. As Gordon Hayward gets his legs, you see Kyrie in a facilitating mode, getting the ball to Marcus Smart and Gordon Hayward. The confidence is going to rise at the right time when they get to playoff basketball. Wouldn't be shocked at all if you saw that team represent the East in the finals.
Yeah,
I'd be shocked.
I got Celtics, too. I think the way they moved the ball last night and the team they was playing showed, and the way they won, showed them that they can get the job done. The Warriors, they've been looking bad. This is the worst they've looked at this part of the season in the last 2 years. I'm not worried about them, but this is not the team that we've seen the last couple of years. Yeah. But definitely, that was a big game for Boston going into the playoffs.
I think it says a lot about both. And I say that because the challenge with Steve Kerr has been human nature. How do we fight it? How do I get my guys after this long grind to get up to play in the regular season? They haven't been able to find that out yet. Mm-hmm. And yes, they can turn it up, but their bench, watch the game, is not as strong as it was in the previous year. So they got some issues they got to deal with in that regard. They're going to be fine. But yet and still, it shows a lot about how challenging it is to continue to compete. And on Boston's side, their big thing was, I called the game last night. Coming on the road, this could bring us together as a team. Forget everything that happened before.
let's use this road trip as a way to reconnect to each other, to spend time with each other, mm-hmm. and forget it, the wins or losses. How we play the game is what's going to matter. And watching how they played and how they supported each other, the bench players to the guys on the floor, it was just fantastic.
To that point, last year they closed out, you know, sputtering. 10 of the last 17 they lost. Mm-hmm. You look at Golden State. After that 73-win season that didn't end up being a championship season, it just seemed like it clicked for this team that, you know, it doesn't matter. We get into seeding. We could get to number one seed, whatever way that may come. But let's just get in there and get it going. Mm-hmm. You see those issues? Can they hit the switch again?
Well, I mean, after you win three championships in the last 4 years, you know what you have to do coming to playoffs. You know that's a different level of basketball. So with the closes they have, with the MVP experience they have, they know when the playoff time comes, this team will be ready. The coaches won championships, two coaches, championship coaches over there. So this team will be ready, but at the same time, you don't want to go into the playoffs not playing well. Yeah. That's any team.
But they did it last year and they won.
They wasn't playing bad. Yeah. They wasn't playing bad. The way they playing right now, even with adding Boogie, you know, he's not even playing as well as they want him to play. All that stuff coming together, that's not the way you want to go into the playoffs.
Jim, I wanted to ask you, easy to get up to play Golden State. That's King Kong. Mm-hmm. And so Boston got up and played. Do you think they'll be able to sustain this feeling that they want to have on this road trip?
And that's a great point because Brad Stevens pointed it out. He said, listen, so we play the best team in the West the first game. What happens when we got to play Sacramento, okay, who's fighting for their lives in regards to playoffs, okay, and the other teams on the road trip? That's going to be the telltale sign of how they react and how they respond. Is this a one-off game where everybody feels good, or do we carry this forward and continue? Because the way they played, especially at the beginning of the game, heck, that was a team we saw last year in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Cutting, moving, unselfish. They
what
supported.
What was Kyrie doing?
Kyrie was facilitating.
I talked to him actually, you know, yesterday before the game, and he texted me. We were just talking about the game. And
right.
I remember one thing he said, it's our time. So they went into a game with that game with a different focus. He went into the game with a different focus. I think they went into a more team focus than ever before. And I think it showed last night with all the assists they had, the way they were sharing the ball. And when Gordon Hayward can come off the bench and get 30 points, they could beat almost anybody.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley, joined by D'Angelo Hall and DeQuell Jackson. Let's return to the NFL, where the rumor that the Cardinals are considering drafting Kyler Murray and trading Josh Rosen is gaining serious steam. Reportedly, at least one team says the Cardinals have been shopping Rosen, last year's 10th overall pick, whose disappointing rookie year ended with head coach Steve Wilks being fired after Arizona finished with the league's worst record. Question here is, Josh Rosen a flop in Arizona, and that's part of the reason why they're interested in Kyler Murray. Who's to blame, Josh Rosen or the Cardinals for not properly supporting him?
Josh Rosen came in woofing, came in barking, came in, everybody made a mistake not drafting him earlier. All right, that's cool. All right, you set the tone, you set the climate. And then you went out there and had the worst quarterback rating of all starting quarterbacks. And it's crazy, it's a fear-based mentality why people don't want to woof and talk trash. It's not so much that they don't feel it, it's just they know the boomerang effect. It's coming back. You're going to have a lull in play. You may have a dry stretch. They're going to use that criticism against you. And it's funny, if you look at him compared to a Sam Darnold, threw the second most interceptions in the league, and only two spots ahead of him in terms of quarterback rating, at the bottom with him. Josh Allen, at the bottom with him. No one's talking about those guys departing their cities and their teams. You go back to Jared Goff's rookie year. It was even worse than what Josh Rosen did last year. However, you look at all those personalities, it didn't get in front of them in their production. I hate to say it, man, but Josh Rosen did this to himself. Now he's in that position.
Yeah, for me, it's the Cardinals' fault and it's Josh Rosen's fault. All last year, the only thing I heard this guy talk about, Josh Rosen, that is, was how great he was. And my question was, a college quarterback that feels that good about themselves should have won more games. So that was a red flag for me. Then I just didn't, you know, it was something about that quarterback position. You got to bring guys together. I didn't think Josh Rosen possessed some of those intangibilities to be able to bring guys together. So, you know, some of this is his fault, but the Cardinals, man, the Cardinals got to, you know, when you draft a guy in the top 10, obviously something you saw in him that made you give up some other draft picks to get him, to move up to get him, right? They didn't give Coach Wilkes the time he needed to develop.
1 year.
The GM, I don't know if he's wielding the power or ownership's wielding the power, but to me, the GM there hadn't done a great job with picking guys anyway.
Or letting guys go.
Or letting guys
Calais
go.
Campbell,
and letting
Tyrone
guys go.
Yeah,
so to me, it's a little bit of both of these people are at fault. The Cardinals organization and, you know, Josh Rosen.
I agree. I think it mostly falls on the player. You know, you start woofing and all that. You know, people, you basically have a bullseye on your chest when you go out. Mm-hmm. And to back that up with an organization who's, like you mentioned, are in kind of a shambles mode. You let top free agents walk out of the building. You basically, you orchestrate the worst offensive line in the game last season. Didn't give your 10th overall pick a chance. And you let a head coach go after one season. To me, this sounds a lot like the organization I used to play for a long time ago, where there was so much rollover and no continuity. Things start to fall apart. And hopefully this isn't the case. Hopefully Kyler Murray, if that trade happens and they go up
scapegoat, huh?
Yeah, scapegoat.
And see, my problem is everybody always thinks a quarterback, who's better? Is this guy better? Is this guy better? Sometimes it depends what situation you fall into.
Oh, yeah.
That determines how great you are or how bad you ultimately become, you know? And so even for Kyler Murray to get thrown into this situation, like, we already talked about how bad this offensive line is.
Yes.
Like, to me, they have so many other glaring holes on that team. Mm-hmm. A quarterback isn't going to fix them.
When Larry Fitzgerald goes, people will tell the truth about the Arizona Cardinals. He's like covering up the fact that, and what DeQuell's saying is, but DeQuell played for the Browns, and Arizona, despite they went to the Super Bowl that 1 year, but they're really a lot like the Browns, particularly here in recent years. I think it was a mistake to go up and get Josh Rosen. I had question marks when he started. He had other agendas beyond being a great quarterback. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's a sign of arrogance. When you leave college football to go to the NFL, that's such a dramatic leap. If you're not self-aware enough to know, it's nice what I did in college, but that league there?
A different beast.
But did y'all hear D'Angelo, though? Everybody let that go? It's intangibilities to this, Smokey. Did you just go intangibilities? Yeah, no, that's a good thing. You hit that boy.
Define that word. Right?
You hit him with it. I love it.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval ratings for Kyler Murray. Uncle Jimmy, see, where'd you get the shirt, man? Who made you that shirt?
Oh, man, first of all, man, you know, all of this is just this big Uncle Jimmy merch we got going on, man.
Merch?
Yeah, we got it going on like that. You know, first of all, now, let's be real, bro. It's very rare to see our picture on a T-shirt and somebody ain't dead.
Yeah.
or not like this.
Oh, man. Right, where you selling them at, Crenshaw?
Right? Oh, man, I've been knocking them off down at the Slauson Swap Meet. They all gone, man.
They're knocked off then if they're
Slauson. Hey, holler at your boy, man. Hit me up on the Twitters if you want to get a copy, you know what I'm saying, of the Toys B-I-G-M-I, you know what I'm saying? The Medessa made me do it movement, you know what I'm saying?
Here's a highlight from our discussion earlier about Kyler Murray. Somebody got into the interview room, didn't like Kyler Murray and the way he responded, told Charlie Cashley. He repeated, that is news this time of year. And you can take it for what it's worth.
Mm-hmm. If you are the number one potential overall pick, they'll talk to you and they'll be like, man, that dude's a mess. And you just got to make sure you do measured reporting in this moment, in these moments. And I don't know if Charlie's comments come off as measured.
All right, Uncle Jimmy. Active. What's your take on Kyler Murray?
Man, I done told you before, I'm going to tell you again, man. The combine is culturally biased. And everybody know it.
What? The Wonderlic you talking about?
No, the combine, you heard me, is culturally biased.
Explain, how? Like what?
Yeah. Well, you know, the more you sit over there by my nephew, the dumber you get. Right?
Osmosis.
40-yard dash. Hello? Mm-hmm. Bro, come on, you know we dominate the 100-yard dash. Go all the way back to Jesse Owens. I mean, we can't be touched in the 100. Carl Lewis? Hussein Bolt?
You
Hussein.
Hey, wait a minute. Maurice Green. Maurice Green, only good thing that ever came out of Schlegel High School in Kansas City.
Yeah, yeah.
We take gold, silver, bronze. We takes it. Every time. That's what we do.
But we also do well in the 40. You know that, right?
Huh? What?
We also do well in the 40.
We win the 40, too. Us. We.
Okay, but they're talking about the interview didn't go well, bro. Mm. Who's doing the interview? Steve Harvey wasn't interviewing. Tom Joyner, Harpo, I mean, Oprah didn't interview him. See, they don't never let us ask the questions. Kyler Murray would have sounded completely different if they let Uncle Jimmy do the interview.
Oh, no.
What would you have asked?
Stuff that we can relate to. Like, what's the better album? Pac, All Eyes on Me? Or Biggie Ready to Die?
Ooh, how much time we got? Ooh, whoa. Tight.
What does that have to do with football?
Not a damn thing. But what did Jeff Ireland asking about Dez Bryant's mama's personal business have to do with anything?
Message.
Let me answer that. Not a damn thing.
That's a good point. Decent point.
Yeah. Hey, man, you know what? Look here, man, let me tell you something, man, for real talk. You could tell a lot about a man by his musical taste. See, Pac was more of a diva, okay? You know, he was more of a diva than Biggie, you know? You know, Pac wanted all the attention on himself, you know? That's why he came to L.A., you know? He wanted all eyes on me. Biggie was a team player. You know, he's loyal. You know, see, Uncle Jimmy a lot smarter than what y'all think. I know about football than you know.
I mean,
well. You know, whoa. I heard y'all sitting talking earlier, talking about y'all want a woman on the sidelines.
Yeah.
NFL need Uncle Jimmy on the sideline.
What, barbecue?
Hey, first of all, let me tell you something. Uncle Jimmy in the Madden Video Hall of Fame. Matter of fact, hey, hit me up on my my username. Uncle Jimmy, SFY. One big U and some little letters after that, SFY.
Lowercase.
If you want some, come get some. You okay? Get beat up by old man.
This is real?
No. He's a serious Madden player.
Tell your boy, Miller Genuine Drew, or what his name is over there, tell him come get some. I'm about this. Tell him to get beat up by an old man.
He's a serious
Madden. He's special on the sticks?
Hey, boy, if you beat me, you can get one of these T-shirts. Now, come get some.
Want some, get some. Bad enough.
Uncle Jimmy, SFY.
Yeah, his thumbs are in the Madden Hall of Fame. He's good with the joystick.
Okay. Hey, boy.
All right, we got to get to our approval rating for Kyler Murray.
All right.
We just did him a few days ago. I'm just dropping him 1 point off the Charlie Cashley deal. You know, I can't overreact to it, but I'm going to drop him 1 point in character. Overall total of 76, still an all-star level for Kyler Murray.
Yeah, I am not affected at all by the reports, by those who are leaking information, the gamesmanship, not getting caught up in that wash. He's the same guy he was before this interview. He's going to be the same guy because I saw the film. Go.
You didn't like my point about apples don't fall far from trees?
I did, but I'm different than my pops and my moms. You not different?
No.
Oh, I'm the
same reflection of my mom and dad.
Hey, everyone. Jason Whitlock here. Thank you for listening to the Speak for Yourself podcast. I want to tell you about another podcast from Fox Sports that we're very excited about. It's Waltrip Unfiltered, featuring two-time Daytona 500 winner Michael Waltrip. Michael will be speaking with the biggest names in NASCAR each week and discussing the biggest storylines in the sport, like Daytona 500 winner Denny Hamlin. Episode 1 is available already. Subscribe and listen to Waltrip Unfiltered right now. Let's get the show rolling.